My name's Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the 75th Anniversary International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Antonio. And specifically, I welcome you to our session on AA's history of love and service. Could I ask you please to silence your cell phones? And could I ask you also to please join me in a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years? Before we get started, I wanted to give some very special thanks and recognition to the archives director at your AA General Service Office in New York, a non-alcoholic, Michelle Mirza. Michelle. If you have not seen the wonderful archives display over in the convention center, boy, I tell you, you've got to spend some time there. Okay, I'm going to make a few opening comments, and then we're going to hear from our speakers, J. S., Gail L., that would be her, and Arthur S.
No relation.
On July 3rd, 1950, which is 60 years ago tomorrow, our co-founder, Dr. Bob, delivered his farewell comments at the first International AA Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. During his talk, he mentioned that, quote, our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind, end of quote. Today, of course, we have three talented AAs who will share on this legacy. Over the years, Alcoholics Anonymous has constantly expanded its outward focus on reaching alcoholics. Our early members lovingly worked out a program of recovery from alcoholism, including the principles of surrender, self-survey, admission of faults, restitution for harm done, prayer, meditation, and reaching out to fellow sufferers. They drew from the Oxford groups, medicine, religion, psychology, practical experience, and anything else that worked. In countless selfless acts of love and service, they painstakingly sponsored alcoholics face-to-face and started groups all over the world because love expands. The spirit of AA immediately led the fledgling movement to connect with other alcoholics in what became known as 12-step work. Hospitals opened their doors wide to AA. From the beginning, AA also cooperated with physicians because physicians recognized that love, an important part of healing, expands. Beginning in San Quentin Prison, we found that prison walls are no match for love. Members of the clergy quickly saw how the AA program fulfilled the spiritual strivings of the alcoholics they often fruitlessly counseled, showing that the true religious impulse of love expands. AA turned to the press to inform the public that recovery from alcoholism is possible, making the world aware of AA's message of hope and recovery is further evidence that love expands and that love is not a secret. In 1939, we published our own recovery experience, so our message could never be distorted. We called that book Alcoholics Anonymous, from which our society derived its name. Over the years, AA has published a variety of specialty literature for young people, women, gay men and lesbians, blacks and African Americans, older alcoholics, prison inmates, members of the armed forces, Native North Americans, the blind and hearing impaired, those with low literacy levels, and others. Currently in production are pieces in which atheists and agnostics share their experience with finding sobriety in AA and for those with special needs. Love reaches out to all those whose alcoholism makes them feel different and alone, meeting them where they're at and now we're not where we think they ought to be. We have made sure that the AA Grapevine has published a monthly magazine continuously for 66 years. This constant beacon of light is a shining example of love in action. In the early 1940s, AA began cooperating with the Quarterly Journal of Studies on Alcohol, the Yale Summer School of Alcohol Studies, the Yale Plan Clinics, and the National Committee for Education on Alcoholism. We are most grateful for the dedication and concern of our many friends in the alcoholism field who show us once again that love expands. Special gatherings of AA have occurred since our earliest days. The first women's group started in 1941. The first young people's group and first African American group in 1945. International doctors in AA in 1949. Services for seagoing AAs began in the late 1940s and eventually became a correspondence group for loners, those who live in isolated areas, internationalists, who are seagoing AAs, and homers, who are physically disabled AAs. Considerable effort has gone into structuring our services to ensure our continued availability for the legions of alcoholics yet to come. Our traditions developed to ensure our unity so we can focus on our primary purpose, avoid distractions, and continue to carry the message of recovery to alcoholics worldwide. We're in the home stretch, folks. Under the principles of the ninth tradition, our 12-step work is often organized to make sure that love continues to expand. Early members started the Alcoholic Foundation, now the General Service Board, to ensure the long-term fiscal and policy integrity of our fellowship. They organized a headquarters office, now known as the General Service Office. They started Works Publishing, now known as AA World Services, to oversee our publishing and services. They implemented the General Service Conference as the successor to our co-founders and early members. Over the years, AA has developed a network of service entities, areas, groups, districts, answering services, intergroups, central offices, and all kinds of committees on public information, literature, corrections, treatment facilities, cooperation with the professional community, hospital and institutions, archives, young people, elder communities, bridging the gap, special needs and accessibilities, and other issues. In 1969, the first World Service meeting was held. It has met every 2 years ever since. AA now has a presence in over 150 countries, with 60 general service offices, and the Big Book has been translated into 57 languages. And that'll probably go up next week. Love is bigger and more powerful than borders, race, politics, language, and other distinctions that separate rather than unify humanity worldwide. But still, we must remember that there are alcoholics within a few blocks of this hotel who have never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, or worse, what they have heard about us makes AA unattractive to them. We still have a lot of work to do. Our past chair of the General Service Board, Byrne Smith, wrote, quote, "But this third legacy of service has a string to it, and the string is that we are granted the use of this legacy for a lifetime upon the condition that we will not only look after it, but increase its spiritual content for the generations that will follow us. Each succeeding generation, as it receives this legacy, must similarly protect it if they wish to employ it and gain life by it and pass it on to the next generation with an enriched spiritual content. End of quote. The early AA members had it figured out. Love and service are the same thing. Our first speaker today is Jay S. from Redondo Beach, California.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jay, and I'm an alcoholic. God's doing for me today what I couldn't do for myself, because it's 1:45 on a Friday, San Antonio, and I haven't had anything to drink yet today. Amazing. Amazing. Bill Wilson, when he spoke about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, said that if we were going to tell the history of AA, that we could start with Noah. But if I start there, Gail might get a little upset. And so we're going to start a little further down the line. In Long Beach, Bill W. gave a talk, and he said that every river has a wellspring at its source. AA is like that, too. In the beginning, there was a spring which poured out in a clergyman, Dr. Sam Shoemaker. Way back in 1934, he began to teach us the principles and the attitudes that afterward came to full flower in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill also says, Dr. Bob and I have often deplored being called co-founders because such titles may create the impression that we pretty much invented, structured, and spread AA all by ourselves. Nothing could be further from the truth. Where did we learn about moral inventory, amends for harm done, turning wills and lives over to the care of God, prayer and meditation and all the rest? The spiritual substance of our steps came straight from Dr. Bob and my own earlier association with the Oxford groups and Sam Shoemaker. Dr. Silkworth gave us the knowledge of the illness, but Sam gave us concrete knowledge of what we could do about it. One showed us the mystery of the locks which kept us in prison, and the other gave us the spiritual keys for our liberation. What I'd like to do today is talk to you about the steps of the Oxford group, where it came from, how it is that people work together. Sam Shoemaker got these keys, these liberation keys, from a guy by the name of Frank Buchman. I used to call him Buckman, and when I started to interview people that knew him, they said, if you're going to talk about our friend, please say his name correctly. So his name is? Thank you. As a young man, Buchman gave everything he had to a home that he created for indigent boys in the slums of Philadelphia. And he got this, it was a hospice, they called it in those days, and it was kind of like a sober living place. The boys came and they got Bible study, they got some nice clothes, some better clothes to wear, they got something to eat, and hopefully some work and Christian education. And this enterprise became so successful that the board, the church board, said, you're spending too much money. What we want you to do is we want you to cut the food that you're giving the boys in half. And Frank said, you can't do that. If you do that, you'll gut the entire operation. And he quit. He just had a justifiable resentment. Anybody ever had one of those? He'd worked himself past exhaustion. His health was to the breaking point. He went to Europe and he spent a year going around trying to get better. But this resentment just kept coming back and coming back and coming back. He reached the point where he's tapped out. He's in Keswick, England. He's gone there to an evangelical conference to get together with a friend. The friend doesn't show up. So now he's really lost. And there was a woman by the name of Jessie Penn Lewis who was given a talk on the cross of Christ. He goes into this thing, and as this woman speaks, he had a vision. And the vision was that the cross collapsed and became an eye. And Frank went, oh my goodness, I'm the seventh wrong man. I'm as wrong as these guys have been. Frank said then that there was a moment of spiritual peak of what God could do for me. I was made a new man. My hatred was gone. I knew I had to write 6 letters of apologies to those men that I hated. Those letters of amends spawned a revolution in Frank Buchman, a revolution that later became what we know as Alcoholics Anonymous. That evening, Frank was introduced to a young Cambridge man, and as they talked and Frank told the story of his moral regeneration, the young man said, I want that. And he made a decision. Frank said that this was the first person that I personally had led to make the vital decision, to make a change. And from that, he intuitively knew that I need to be clean in order for a message to be carried. My own house needs to be in order. And he started going around carrying that message to others. In 1918, he ended up in China. And there was a young man there by the name of Samuel Moore Shoemaker. He was teaching a Bible class. And Frank was there with a group of people. They were called the Life Changers. They were sharing these steps that had been developed over the 10 years between Frank's experience and when he ran across Sam. And during the talk, Sam went, I got to talk to this guy. So afterwards, Frank goes and talks to Sam, and he says to him, hey, I've got this guy in my class, and if you will come and speak to him, I know that if he changes, everybody else will fall in line, I'll be a success, things will be good. And Frank looked at him and said, what is wrong with you that you cannot transmit a vital message to these people? Sam just got a little upset. And he went home that night as he walked around his rooms enraged at this guy from Pennsylvania. And who is he? He began to look at himself. And as he viewed his own character, he realized later, he said, I've been a fraud for God. That I'd been talking the talk, but I hadn't been walking the walk. And that night, he made a decision that he was going to throw it all in and go wherever it was that God wanted him to go. And he was really concerned about that because he did not want to spend the rest of his life in China. And he went the next day and he had a talk with Frank and he told him what was up and Frank suggested that what he do is he go and tell the truth to the people that he'd been not truthful with. That? And when he did, something happened. Sam had a change. Another word for this word change is conversion. Okay, don't get afraid. Don't get afraid. But this is one of our other co-founders, William James, described this word, conversion, this process as this. He said it's the process, either gradual or sudden, by which a self, a person, divided and consciously wrong, inferior and unhappy, becomes whole, unified, consciously right, superior and happy. And I would submit to you that that's what happens in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous all around the world every day, that people become whole. From this experience that Sam had, he began to carry this to others. And he became known as one of the great life changers because of his ability to communicate honestly what was going on with him to another person, invite them to make a decision, and then that person to follow it up with action. A description of Sam in action from a guy by the name of Charles Clapp, who wrote a book called The Big Bender. For those of you who are younger, it would be called The Long Binge. And this is to illustrate that the Oxford group had four steps. The first one was sharing. The second, surrender. The third, restitution. And the fourth they called guidance. So this first step, sharing, would be kind of what we would call our fourth and fifth step. It's what people would do. It would be a way that a person who had had a change would invite an unchanged person maybe to admit they might have a little problem. Talk about what you used to be like, what happened, what you're like now, and if you identified that maybe you'd come along. Anyway, this comes from the Big Bender. This is Sam talking to Charles. Frankly and honestly, he told me of his own failures and defeats, what he had done about them, relating some of these things to what I had told him about myself. Never before had a man been so honest with me. I was not sure that there was a God. Well, Sam said, why not find out? Why not find out? And one of the great things about the Oxford group, one of the great things about Samuel Moore Shoemaker, and one of the fabulous gifts that we in Alcoholics Anonymous have to give every person who suffers from alcoholism is this thing about let's find out. You do not have to believe anything, but try something and see what happens. Just try something. It has to be an honest experiment. Sam wrote later, the experimental approach seems to me to be of the essence of our finding the help of a higher power. We first lean on another human being who seems to be finding an answer. And then we come to lean upon the higher power that stands behind them. So after this thing of sharing, this identifying the problem, doing what we'd call steps 4 and 5, we got a problem. We better do something about it. So the next step was surrender. Now see if this doesn't ring a bell. Bill and Lois went to 3 Oxford group meetings a week at Calvary Church for the first 3.5 years that Bill was sober when they were in town. Okay? And Sam's the guy who was running the show there. See if this doesn't sound familiar to some literature that you might read on occasion. Religion is a risk. Faith is not sight. It's a high gamble. There are only 2 alternatives. God is or he isn't. You either leap one way or the other. Sound familiar? That was written in 1923. Well, that's AA. Or you ever, here's the Oxford group thing about describing surrender. You ever had anybody say, I'm stuck on the third step? Well, how about this for a little hard-hearted sponsor? It's a simple decision, put into simple language, spoken aloud to God in front of a witness at any time and in any place, that we have decided to forget the past and God and to give our future into his keeping. Nothing more need be added. Nothing could be taken away. And here's a great surrender prayer. This is from the Oxford group books were great. They got great titles. Soul Surgery. For Sinners Only. I was a pagan. I wonder why my wife brought those books to me. Here's Vic's surrender prayer. I think it's every bit as good as the one in that other book we read. I surrender thee my entire life, O God. I've made a mess of it. Trying to run it myself. You take it, the whole thing, and run it for me according to your will and plan. So, okay, we got a problem, we surrendered. Now, to show that there is actually some meaning to this surrender. It's not just another,
okay, I'll do anything.
The next step is restitution. And this is where spirituality actually happens. I think it's fascinating that we sit here this weekend, you know, at the International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if we go and think about the founding of our movement, you know, I mean, we got the stock speculator, not broker, and the proctologist that shook a lot. You want to talk about needing divine intervention. The founding of Alcoholics Anonymous is not when Bill and Ebby meet at the kitchen table. It's not when Bill goes into the hospital. It's not when Bill gets out of the hospital. It's not when Bill starts going to meetings at the Oxford Group and going down to the Calvary Mission and working with others. It's not when Bill goes to Ohio and meets Dr. Bob. The founding of our movement comes on the day that the proctologist, who's coming off a drunk, who's been being nourished with love from his wife and his friend from New York with paraldehyde, stewed tomatoes, and sauerkraut, and it's time to go to work, honey, he's going to the hospital to do a surgery. And his sponsor, Bill, gives him a couple of goofballs and a couple bottles of beer. And Bob says to him, I'm going to go through with it. Bill says, of course you are. Get in there and go to work. Bill goes home. Bob gets the surgery done and he doesn't come home. Bill and Ann are just a little upset. And that evening when Bob finally gets home, can you imagine the emotional energy that he walked into? And he says, where have you been? He says, I've been out mending fences. He'd been out making amends. And that is where Alcoholics Anonymous starts. And that is the message that we have to carry to people. After we identify the problem, that we surrender and ask for help, and then we go out and we do something, and it needs to be done. And then the fourth step of the Oxford Group was what they called guidance. If you want to know about guidance, all you have to do is look in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. In the 10th and 11th step, it talks about it. But the other thing that they did, they were very, very clear of expectantly and joyously each morning asking for direction. Knowledge of God's will and the power to carry it out. And then what they suggested you do is you write down what comes across your heart. They called it listening to God. Try and get an alcoholic to listen to God. But tell him to go get the Artist's Way and do morning pages and they have no problem with it. Same spiritual principle. And what is the guidance? What it is driven towards only in helping others. Spirituality comes, how do you know an experience is real? By its fruits. It's by its fruits that are known. And is this thing transmittable? And this is the only thing that Alcoholics Anonymous is about, which is this 12th step. I'd like you just for a moment, if you will, to close your eyes and to think about that first meeting that you walked into. And how you were greeted. And think about the woman or man who took the time to share this with you. and what are the fruits of your recovery? What are the fruits of it? In your home, with your employee, and in your community, but in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have the opportunity here to save lives. My friend Gordon taught me, he died with 45 years of sobriety. And Gordon said that each and every man and woman in this room, there is one life who you are designed to save. And if you aren't here and you haven't done the work when that person comes through the door, what's going to happen to them? This is only about working with others. This is the legacy of AA's love and service. And finally, I'd like to leave you with a line of William James's about what happens. How do we know that a real change has happened? That a real spiritual experience has happened? Impossible things are possible. New energies and endurances are shown. The personality is changed. The person is born anew. They go a whole day without drinking. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Jay. And now I am just delighted to present our next speaker, Gail L. from Ohio.
Hello, everybody. My name is Gail, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. Howdy. It doesn't get any better than this. It just doesn't. Happy birthday, everybody. It is wonderful to be here. I want to thank Michelle for the invitation to be one with this gathering here today. I want to thank the speaker that went before me, and I'm going to thank the speaker that's going to come after me ahead of time. And I just want to tell you, they have me sandwiched up here between men. I was here one other time. I visited the Alamo, and I found out that it's men who fought there, but it's women who saved it. The Daughters of the Revolution are preserving it for you. You know, they're great hunters. I also see these green shirts. And you were there to greet us when we got off the plane. That's love and service. 3,000 people attended Cleveland in 1950. This year in San Antonio, we needed 6,000 volunteers. Now, of course, with those green shirts, they were breaking their anonymity at the level of airport. And I couldn't help but think, like I always think, at things like this. Where are they? The men and women we're going to talk about, I believe they're here with us. I believe their spirit lives on in us. And I didn't always know this, but an old-timer told me. He was there in 1955 when Bill turned it over to us. There was an empty chair there. It was for his friend, Dr. Bob. Bill had placed it there. So if Bill believed that, I believe it today. And I'd like to start off. In fact, you might just kind of picture them sitting over there in those little chairs over there. I want to start out with a quote from Maya Angelou, which I think is appropriate for our topic. When we cast our bread upon waters, we can presume that someone downstream, whose face we may never see, will benefit from our action, even as we enjoy the gifts sent to us from a donor upstream. Well, that stream has spread all over the world. And this weekend, the One World of Alcoholics Anonymous is represented here today. And by the way, those of you who still have your eyes closed because Jay forgot to tell you to open them. You can open them now because, you know, we're highly open to suggestion. You know, we can We can trance out like that, can't we? It's just some of us forget to come back. From up here, you can see it. In 1935, the idea of one drunk helping another drunk was revolutionary. But the idea of love and service really wasn't. As Jay has pointed out to you, a lot of it just kind of trickled down and was inherent in the Oxford group, and especially for Akron, the Four Absolutes. Dr. Bob said those were the only yardsticks that we had before we had 12 steps. Four words. That's keeping it simple, isn't it? Honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. And there's some questions that help us with those words. Is what I'm about to think, say, or do right or wrong? Is it true or is it false? Is it ugly or is it beautiful? And how does it affect the other guy? And we still study them, and they still work today for us. This was a trial and error process. These people were seekers. And out of their strength and out of their experience and out of their hope, these things I like to call slender threads, because they were seekers, there was a lot of synchronicity. People being at the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. And some of you that have heard me talk know if you remove just one person, we may not be here today. That's how slender some of those threads are. And for those of you that were expecting some kind of a PowerPoint, those of you that, some of you know, I love to do PowerPoint. As a matter of fact, but you can't bring Bill back from the dead like I can. They found a spiritual solution for a soul malady. And that's why they called it soul surgery, and that's what our steps are today. And I know if you could see Dr. Bob's prescription pad, and some of you have seen it, I don't think actually Dr. Bob wrote it, but it says, trust God, clean house, and give it away. Love and service. And then there's a series of events. How about Abby, huh? Here's this pathetic drunk with just a little over a month of sobriety, makes a 12-step call and gives Bill the 12 steps before they're written. How awesome is that? You want to know where they come from? You can number them in Bill's story. Bill doesn't write chapter 5 until after he writes his story. I don't know if Bill even knew that Abby brought it to him, but is that not amazing? Had to be God's guidance. And then how about Bill in Towns Hospital? What a moment that was. He has this spiritual experience. And right after that, here's his thought. The thought came that there are thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what has so freely been given to me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They, in turn, might work with others. There's your purpose. Primary purpose comes right out of that spiritual experience. And then the experiences continue. And this is funny because Bill's going to go back to Clinton Street, right? And in my notes, if I'm not careful, I'll start talking about Bill Clinton. I've got Bill here and I've got Clinton here. And I said, oh, my God, what's Bill Clinton doing in my notes? But Bill goes back to Clinton Street. And he starts for the next 5 months. And what does he do? He does nothing but try to give it away. He's working. He's doing nothing but trying to carry this message to another drunk. And he's not successful. Can we not look back today and be grateful for that? Because what comes out of all of that is the message that we need. Bill looks at him and she says, but Bill, you're sober. You're sober. Perhaps he might have gotten distracted if there had been a lot of successes and he might not have seen that. So even out of those failures, we get light. And he is going, and then there's a prayer. There's a woman by the name of Henrietta Cyberling. You know, our friends helped get us here too. Like Sam has already been talked about. But Henrietta was a friend of Alcoholics Anonymous and she dearly loved Bob and Ann, but you see, Bob had been in the Oxford group for 2.5 years, and he wasn't sober. He had read everything. He had done the prayers. He had done absolutely everything. And out of her love for him, she prayed. She prayed in her morning guidance, and she got an answer. Here it is. Bob is not to touch one single drop of alcohol. Bob kind of thought it would be something like a mountain moving or something. She had an intervention for Bob. And through guidance That intervention was successful. And he admitted that he was a secret drinker and he could not stop. And she continued to pray for Bob. And I believe it's that prayer that connected those two men on Mother's Day weekend in 1935. And here's what Bill brought Bob. And Bob says this in his own words. What was missing from Bob was service. What Bill had discovered was service. And so the two men meet and a spark is struck. And boy, we got a fire going this weekend, don't we? And you know, when I think of love and service, you see these guys, and Kenny, my friend, and I, we've been riding around and just giggling and saying to people, we say, hey, do you have any justified resentments? And they go, no. And then we hand them some of these resentments. You've not seen these. But we watch these people, and they're standing on the elevators here in the hotels, and they look like guys at the airport looking for terrorists or something, don't they? And you know, this town isn't going to be the same when we leave. And they're thinking, you know, people that are serving drinks are kind of wondering why we're not drinking. And we're hungry as hell, and they won't start cooking at 10 o'clock at night. Boy, did they miss it, didn't they? They shut down the food at Timmy. Anyway, so they're standing at the top of these things, and I look at them, and I think, yeah, they're in service. But by the end of this weekend, they're going to be in love and service. Because it rubs off. I've seen it happen in Akron. It just rubs off. So the two men are sober, and Bill stays on in Akron, and they know that they need another drunk to work with. And thank God Bill D. didn't know Bob only had about a week of sobriety. That would have freaked him out. But they make that call on Bill D. And here's what's important. On July 4th, this weekend, 1935, Bill D. is going to walk out of City Hospital a free man to never drink again. And in your big book, Bill tells you, that is when group number one began. So this weekend, when you see fire in the sky, you celebrate your independence and your group's independence from this disease called alcoholism and the bondage that it had us all in. Celebrate being happy, joyous, and free. So the two became three, and the three became we. And as we grew and our strength, experience, and hope grew, and Bill looked out, he created a spiritualized society that would keep us in unity, one to the other. And the examples that they set for us, huh? Bob, the Prince of 12 Steppers, he's the one that got the surrenders that Jay talked about. You see, we couldn't sit still back then for that guidance. We'd be jonesing, right? And the Oxford group would want us to sit there and listen to God, and we couldn't sit still at all. Bob would take them into the upper room, and that's where he would get them. And then he would work with Ignatian starting in 1939 with over 5,000 drunks. Never charged a dime. Took out insurance on his own sobriety like we do when we do the same thing. Then there's the morning quiet time that Bob took, starting out with a special prayer, followed by 20 minutes of reading, followed by guidance, getting his orders for that day, and then being about his father's business. And then there's Ann, the mother of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she would open the book of James, the Bible, which they both read from, and she had two favorite quotes. And one of them was, God is love. And the other one was, faith without works is dead. Now think about that. There's your love, and there's your service. And she'd feed the new guys the spiritual pablum. And she would wait. Her guidance was so keen. And she was so open and so obedient to the will of God that she would know ahead of time. God didn't just speak to her in the now. He spoke to her ahead of time. There's somebody coming, and she would tell Bob, and she'd say, we can't go to that picnic. We can't go out of town this weekend. Someone's coming. We need to stay home. And she stayed home this one weekend, and who came but Archie? And Archie was sick, and this is depression times, folks. This program came together during the darkest times in our country's history, and our co-founders thought it was providential. And they opened up their homes in Akron. And they brought them in and they nursed them back to health. And in this case, they said, as long as we have this home, our home is your home. And literally, Ann Smith cared for Archie for 10 months. And he went back to Detroit and started AA in Detroit. And that's how so much of it started. In 1939, the big book will be published. Oh, I want to tell you, we're talking about things being cast upstream and ending up downstream. Well, when Henrietta went to say that prayer, she was also tipped off by a woman by Delphine Weber that was concerned that that the Smiths weren't sharing. And I told that at King's School for the 50th anniversary, and a gentleman from the back of the room came up to me, and he was crying, and he said, Delphine Weber, that's my grandmother. I didn't know that my grandmother had anything to do with the founding of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1939, the book will be written, and there'll be a young woman, excellent typist by the name of Ruth Hawk, and she's going to type our big book, only we can't pay her. So she's not doing it for money. She must have been doing it for love and service, because we rip her off one of those stock certificates that weren't worth anything. We gave her one of those a week. Little did she know that the book she was typing would one day be in the hands of her daughter downstream. That daughter is with us. Lori, would you stand with 33 years of sobriety? Don't think something you're doing today might affect somebody downstream, one of your loved ones. 1941, Dr. Bob gets in the act. He thinks the big book's too hard for the blue-collar worker to read. Some gentleman happened to have this pamphlet here, so I'm going to play Vanna White here for a minute. This is one of the pamphlets that was published in 1941. And in these five pamphlets that we have, and our office still publishes them, is sort of captured what was happening with the first 100 and the love and service. Now, I really shouldn't say love and service. I should say tough love and service. If you think they just put the love syrup all over everything, they didn't. Let me give an example. First of all, you remember, shut up and get in the car, don't you? Shut up and sit down. Take the cotton out of the ears and put it in your mouth. Don't cut any corners. If you think your problem has always seemed to be shared by no one else in this world and you cannot conceive of anyone else in your predicament, forget it. Your problem dates back to the very beginning of history. If you lose your job, someone better will replace you. Anybody getting humble yet? Let me know. You'll be down on your knees by the time I'm done with you. If you die, your wife will mourn briefly and then remarry. Your children will grow up and you will be but a memory. Ladies, the only difference between a female and a male drunk is that the former is likely to be treated with a little more consideration and courtesy. Although she really doesn't deserve it. To the newcomer, there's all kinds of advice to the sponsor and to the newcomer, and some of it's pretty good, like maybe we ought to be calling them a little more. To the newcomer, it is your life. It is your choice. If you are not completely convinced to your own satisfaction that you're alcoholic, that your life is unmanageable, if you're not ready to part with alcohol forever, it would be better for all concerned if you discontinue reading this. Give up the idea of becoming a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. In other words, don't waste our time. And then it reminds us of our responsibility to the new guy. This is pretty serious. We are reminded to remember you have in your hands the most valuable property in the world. The future of a fellow man. Treat his life as carefully as you would your own. You are literally responsible for his life. I mean, it was the golden rule, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. Treat others the way you would like to be treated. Partnership with God. God gives you the guidance. We do the work. And the belief that we can do all things through God who strengthens us. Now, we have two co-founders. Their perspective wasn't always the same, was it? But they agreed to disagree agreeably. And in the words of Smitty, Dr. Bob's son, if it was up to Dr. Bob, he'd have never left Akron. But you know what? If it was up to Bill, he'd have franchised it. Does that say seven or two? I got two. But I think what's important is when they disagreed, they moved together. They moved towards each other, not away from each other. And in the examples of all the people is where our story lies. Not in the words so much, but in the example. It was by attraction that they promoted, putting the common welfare of AA first. You know, because if the group doesn't survive, we don't survive. So we're supposed to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God. You know, I had the opportunity to visit and hear one of Bill's mentors speak, Norman Vincent Peale. And I was kind of in the back, but I heard him say this. Say yes to life. Say yes to life. We're all here because we've said yes. My whole life in Alcoholics Anonymous has led me to this exact moment in time because I've said yes. Whenever AA asks you to do something, we say yes. And you know, when Dr. Bob died, Bill had a little memorial thing that he wrote, and I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit. He says, we are all links in a chain of event called Alcoholics Anonymous. And may your link never break. And may God bless you. And may God continue to bless Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gail. Wait, there's more to come. I'm thrilled beyond measure to introduce our third and last speaker today, Arthur S., who is a Northeast Texas area archivist and historian. Please help us welcome Arthur.
Thanks, Mom. My name is Arthur, and I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. This portion of the workshop is going to be a brief history of facts and myths about the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which we call the Big Book. Co-founder Bill W. began writing the Big Book in April 1938 at the business office of New York member Hank P. at Honest Dealers, 17 William Street, Newark, New Jersey. Now, Hank P., whose Big Book story is The Unbeliever, started AA in New Jersey. And he also had a significant role in the development of the Big Book. Ruth Hock, AA's first national secretary, wrote, quote, if it wasn't for Bill W., the Big Book would never have been written, and if it wasn't for Hank P., it would never have been published. Hank is credited with writing Chapter 10 to employers, and this is also alluded to in the book Pass It on page 200. Sadly, Hank returned to drinking in April 1940, and he never found sobriety again. Bill W. was certainly the primary author of the Big Book and the 12 Steps, but others did make significant contributions, and that's the way Bill wanted it to be. Bill wrote draft outlines on legal pads, and he dictated the expanded text to Ruth Hock. And each week, he would read the drafts to those admitted at his home at 182 Clinton Street in Brooklyn, New York. And edited copies were sent to Dr. Bob and the Akron members for further review and editing. As they worked their way through the chapters, the New York and Akron members also wrote the personal stories to be included in the book. In the spring of 1938, Bill W. wrote to Dr. Bob that he had drafted the chapters There Is a Solution and Bill's Story. And Bill suggested to Dr. Bob that the completed book should, this is Bill's citation, should work be the work of many people, particularly the individual stories, which should be edited as little as possible. And this will naturally be the heart of the book and must represent the feelings, experience, and personalities of those who write them. And that's Bill's words. Dr. Bob's wife, Ann, was invited to write the chapter portraying the wife of an alcoholic, but she declined. Bill W. wrote the chapter to wives, much to the dismay of his wife, Lois. Bill informed Dr. Bob that nearly everyone in New York favored the title Alcoholics Anonymous, and this was almost a year prior to publication of the big book. On July 18, 1983, Dr. Esther L. Richards wrote a very favorable letter to Bill W. regarding a two-chapter prospectus sent to her for review. She suggested getting a, quote, number one physician in the alcoholism field to write an introduction. Shortly after, Dr. William D. Silkworth wrote a July 27, 1938 letter of support for use in fundraising for the book, and it was incorporated into the chapter's doctor's opinion, together with extracts from a paper that he wrote that was published in the Lancet Medical Journal in July 1939. Dr. Silkworth's name was not added to the doctor's opinion until publication of the second edition in 1955. Prior to publication of the Big Book, there were two groups in AA, one in Akron and the other in New York City. The recovery program consisted of six steps passed on to new members by word of mouth. The lack of any written material resulted in widely varying versions depending upon who was doing the passing on. Differing versions of the six steps can be found in the books AA Comes of Age on page 160, Pass It On on page 197, and a July 1953 Grapevine article by Bill W. titled A Fragment of History, which can be found in the book The Language of the Heart on page 195. The Big Book Pioneer story, He Sold Himself Short, which is on page 263 in the fourth edition, also contains a version of the six steps recorded by Earl T., founder of AA in Chicago. And Dr. Bob was Earl's sponsor, and this reversion reflects a more orthodox Oxford group influence that prevailed in the Midwest. It should be noted, however, that the Oxford group did not have anything that they called or considered to be steps. It was only the alcoholics in New York and Akron, or it was then called the Alcoholic Squad, that exclusively had and practiced steps as their spiritual program of recovery. In his July 1953 Grapevine article, Bill W. wrote, quote, though these principles were advocated according to the whim or liking of each of us, and though in Akron and Cleveland they still stuck by the Oxford group absolutes of honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love, this was the gist of our message to incoming alcoholics up to 1939, when our present 12 steps were put to paper. Well, those 12 steps were actually first put to paper in December of 1938 at Bill's home on Clinton Street in Brooklyn, and an approximate reconstruction of them can be found in the book Pass It On pages 198 and 199. Bill claimed it took him about 30 minutes to do it. There was much, often very heated, debate on the wording of the new 12 steps, and that continued right up until publication of the Big Book. In a May 1955 Grapevine article titled How AA World Services Grew, Bill W. described the book writing project as one where fierce arguments over the drafts dominated the small fellowship's activities for months on end, and that over time he became much more of an umpire than an author. 400 mimeographed, or what they called photolitho in those days, manuscript copies were sent out for review and comments in January of 1939. New York member Jim B. suggested the phrases God as we understood him and power greater than ourselves be added to the steps and basic text. And Bill W. wrote in that July 1953 Grapevine article, quote, those expressions, as we so well know today, prove lifesavers for many of an alcoholic. And Jim B., whose big book story is The Vicious Cycle, started AA in Philadelphia, and he helped start AA in Baltimore, Maryland as well. The manuscript copies sent out for review were returned by March 1939, and they produced very few changes. However, a major change did occur when a Montclair, New Jersey psychiatrist, Dr. Howard, suggested toning down the use of you must to we ought or we should. And Dr. Silkworth and Dr. Harry Thibault offered similar advice. Tom Uzzell, a friend of Hank P. and an editor at Collier's Magazine and a member of the New York University faculty, edited the manuscript and reduced it to around 400 pages. And the cuts came primarily from the personal stories. Now, there are four editions of the Big Book. In April 1939, 4,730 copies of the first edition were published at $3.50 a copy. And that's the equivalent to $54 a copy today. It was a very expensive book in its time. The printer, Edward Blackwell of the Cornwall Press, was told to use the thickest paper in his shop. And the large, bulky volume became known as the Big Book, and the name has stuck ever since. In AA Comes of Age, on page 170, Bill W. wrote that the idea behind the thick, large paper was to convince the alcoholic he was getting his money's worth. The book had 8 Roman and 400 Arabic numbered pages, and the doctor's opinion started as page 1. The basic text ended at page 179, not 164. The second edition Big Book was introduced 16 years later at the historic 1955 International Convention in St. Louis. Bill W. renumbered the pages of the second edition so that page 1 began with Bill's story instead of the doctor's opinion. It's not known why he did this, but there has been... there has been some very creative and entertaining speculation on the matter. 21 years later, the 1976 conference approved publication of the third edition, and 25 years after that, the 2001 conference approved publication of the fourth edition. The United States copyright to the first edition Big Book expired in April 1967, and this was not discovered until 1985, when it was also discovered that the copyright to the second edition expired in 1983. It should be noted, however, that the Big Book copyright has expired only in the United States. It is still in force outside the United States under international treaty agreements. The basic text of the Big Book is, for the most part, protected from radical change by the prevailing sentiment of the AA Fellowship as a whole. Changes to the basic text can be made by conference advisory action, but it is doubtful they would get very far. As early as the second edition, Bill W. sensed that the fellowship was resistant to changing the basic text and was careful to inform the 1955 conference that the main objective of the second edition was to change the personal stories to better reflect the makeup of the membership. His reports stated, quote, "Not an iota of the first part of the text dealing with recovery principles has been changed." Contrary to popular belief, a number of wording changes have been made to the basic text over the years. The wording of Step 12 changed in March 1941 in the second printing of the first edition Big Book. The term spiritual experience was replaced by the term spiritual awakening, and the term as the result of those steps was changed, as the result of those steps. Step 12 was changed again in 1956 in the second printing of the second edition. The term as the result of those steps was restored to its original form as the result of these steps. Now, only one person on this planet could pull off something like that. And to protect his anonymity, I'll simply say that his last name begins with W. In 1947, in the 11th printing of the first edition, the term ex-alcoholic was replaced by the term ex-problem drinker or non-drinker. Over the years, changes have been made to reflect the growth in membership and numbers of groups. Otherwise, the book would read really very odd. The word scores were changed to hundreds, or hundreds were changed to thousands, and so on. And footnotes were added. Several websites have tables detailing the basic text wording changes from edition to edition. The 2006 General Service Conference approved a change to the preface of the fourth edition so that it reads, quote, "Therefore, the first part of this volume describing the AA recovery program has been left largely untouched in the course of revisions made for the second, third, and fourth editions." The word "largely" was added to correct the erroneous impression that the basic text had not been changed over prior editions. The major changes to the Big Book editions really have been in the selection of personal stories so that they better represent a good cross-section of the AA membership. In AA Comes of Age, on page 164, Bill W. wrote, quote, "We had not gotten much further with the text of the book when it was evident that something more was needed. There would have to be a story or case history section to identify us with the distant reader in a way that the text itself might not." The first edition had 29 stories to reflect a membership of 100. The second edition had 37 stories to reflect a membership of around 136,000. The third edition had 43 stories to reflect a membership of around, 1976 membership of around 321,000. And the fourth edition contained 42 stories to reflect a 2001 worldwide membership of over 2 million. In 2003, the book Experience, Strength, and Hope was published, and it contains 56 stories that were previously published in the first three editions and later replaced. Now, there are two somewhat sensitive, and I'm going to bring these up, in the items in the big book that are historically and factually incorrect. One is in Dr. Bob's story, and the other is in the Spiritual Experience Appendix. In his story, Dr. Bob briefly describes his three-day binge at an AMA convention in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And upon his return to Akron, Bill W. helped him through 3 days of sobering up to get ready for a scheduled surgery. Now, Dr. Bob had his last drink on the day of the surgery, and he gives that date as June 10th, 1935. AA also marks this date as the beginning of the AA fellowship. AA Comes of Age, page 147, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, page 72, and Pass It On, page 147, all erroneously state that the AMA convention began the first week in June 1935. The AMA archives has long ago confirmed that the convention began in the second week of June, on June 10th. And this is when Dr. Bob was drinking out there, and continued to June 14th. So, allowing for 3 days of binging and blacking out, followed by 3 days of sobering up, Dr. Bob's sober date actually appears to be June 17th and not June 10th. Now, his story says June 10th, and Bill in AA Comes of Age says June 10th, and I think we're probably going to leave it June 10th. The Spiritual Experience Appendix was added in the second printing of the first edition when the wording of Step 12 was changed to use the term spiritual awakening instead of spiritual experience. And this was done because many members thought that they had to have a sudden, spectacular spiritual experience similar to the one that Bill W. had in Towns Hospital, as he describes in Bill's story. Now, the first edition had a very bright, multicolored dust jacket that was designed by Ray C., whose Big Book story is an artist concept. And he began his story with a quotation that he attributed to Herbert Spencer, which said, quote, "There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle was contempt prior to investigation." Ray C.'s story was not included in the second edition Big Book when it was published in 1955. In 1960, the quotation was added to the Spiritual Experience Appendix in the fourth printing to the second edition. The attribution of the quotation to Spencer is in error. It should be attributed to an English clergyman, an author, and college lecturer by the name of William Paley, who lived from 1743 to 1805. Herbert Spencer, who lived from 1820 to 1903, was a great rival of his fellow Englishman Charles Darwin, who is credited with the theory of evolution. And it was Spencer, not Darwin, who popularized the term evolution. And it was also Spencer who coined the term survival of the fittest. But Spencer did not author the quotation attributed to him in the Big Book. In the remaining time, I'll try to sum up the key role of the Big Book in AA history and why I believe it enjoys and deserves so much respect and admiration from the AA membership. AA's historic 1955 International Convention in St. Louis introduced a new circle and triangle symbol that was prominently displayed on a large banner draping the back of the stage. In AA Comes of Age, page 139, Bill W. described the circle as representing the whole of AA. The triangle represented AA's three legacies of recovery, unity, and service. Now, each of AA's three legacies has a foundation of 12 spiritual principles. They are the 12 steps for the legacy of recovery, the 12 traditions for the legacy of unity, and the 12 concepts for the legacy of service. There's an old saying that hindsight is 20/20, and history is hindsight in searching for cause and effect. The common root action that caused the written evolution of the three legacies of AA very likely took place on October 1937. It was a group conscience decision by the Akron and New York groups to permit the writing of a book of experience that later came to be fondly known in AA as the Big Book. The book's contents explains the 12 steps and AA's legacy of recovery. The foreword to the first edition defines many of the key principles that were later absorbed into the 12 traditions and AA's legacy of unity. And finally, the service structure that was needed to produce and distribute the book and manage the public relations and funds related to book sales provided much of the experience and organization that later helped shape the 12 concepts for AA's legacy of service. The second edition Big Book introduced an appendix containing the long and short form of the 12 traditions. The fourth edition introduced an appendix containing the short form of the 12 concepts for world service. The Big Book now contains all 36 spiritual principles of AA's three legacies of recovery, unity, and service. The Big Book has a remarkable history of carrying the message of recovery throughout the world in the 20th and 21st centuries. 300,000 copies of the first edition were distributed from 1939 to 1955. 1,150,000 copies of the second edition were distributed from 1955 to 1976. 19,550,000 copies of the third edition were distributed from 1976 to 2002. By 2005, distribution reached the 25 million mark and is now exceeding the 30 million mark. And this is just for the English language version of the book. Big Book distribution milestones are celebrated with the presentation of a milestone copy to a distinguished recipient. The 1 millionth copy, a second edition, was presented to President Richard Nixon in April 1973. The 2 millionth copy was presented to HEW Secretary Joseph Califano in June 1979. The 5 millionth copy was presented to Ruth Hawk in July 1985. And the 10 millionth copy was presented to Nell Wing in July 1990. She was Bill W.'s longtime non-alcoholic secretary and AA's first archivist. The 15 millionth copy was given to Ellie Norris in 1996, and she was the widow of former trustee chairman John L. Norris, M.D., affectionately known as Dr. Jack, to the membership. In 2002, the 20 millionth copy was presented to the Fellowship of Al-Anon Family Groups. And in 2005, the 25 millionth copy was presented to Warden of San Quentin Prison, Jill Brown. And this international, a 30 millionth copy will be presented, but you're going to have to show up to see who that's going to go to. Now, in conclusion, I'd like to say that AA's story began with a 5 months sober and still shaky stockbroker from New York. And he had his last drink, which was a beer, in the lobby of Towns Hospital in New York City in December 1934. And while on a failed business trip to Akron, Ohio, he met an alcoholic surgeon who desperately wanted to stop drinking. And he had his last drink, also a beer, in front of Akron City Hospital in June 1935. And it's probably safe to say that when AA's co-founders met, they had no idea at all of the fellowship of alcoholics that would evolve from their humble meeting and how that fellowship would go on to save the lives of millions of alcoholics worldwide over the next 75 years. Their legacies are today described as recovery, unity, and service. And they were our gifts to freely receive, and it is our duty to freely give them away. And it's been a remarkable journey down the road of happy destiny. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Arthur. What a wonderful job. Certainly put a lot of work into that. I want to remind people again of a couple things before we break, and that is that recordings of this meeting will be available at the recording sales booth in Hall B of the Convention Center. The speakers will be up here afterwards if you wish to talk to them. Let's give another hand to all our speakers. And the speakers were J.S. from Redondo Beach, California. Gail L. from Ohio. Arthur S. from the Lone Star State. All right. special acknowledgement again.
Paul Cleary.
Paul who? Paul Cleary. Okay. Thank you. Special acknowledgement again to our non-alcoholic archivist, Michelle Mirza. Please rise, join hands, and join me with the serenity prayer. And then if we could, please clear the room for the next session.